Welcome to the Blue Dot Project podcast, where we share ideas for building regenerative cultures and communities that enable life to thrive on Earth for thousands of years. What does a regenerative real estate project look like? Well, each project is likely to be quite different, but all truly regenerative projects share a few traits. Today, we take you to an uncommonly beautiful part of the world to share two specific projects that are moving from their planning stages to execution. In the prior episode of the Blue Dot Project podcast, we talked about five key differences between conventional real estate development and regenerative development processes. I hope that prior episode left you hungry for some real-life examples, because today we've prepared two nice appetizers for your imagination. In this part two of our discussions with Neil Collins, we take you to the Pacific Northwest region of the United States, where we will learn about two regenerative real estate projects Neil and his company are working on there. Neil, you'll remember, is CEO and co-founder of Latitude Regenerative Real Estate Development, and he's also host of the Regenerative Real Estate Podcast. Both of the projects we'll talk about today are in the beautiful coastal area of Washington State, between the cities of Seattle, Washington in the United States, and Vancouver in British Columbia, Canada. One project involves a farm, residential community, hotel, and mixed-use development on the coast along Puget Sound. The other is a hospitality project that revitalizes an abandoned inn and offers views of both the mountains and the sea. Today's episode is likely to be of value to impact investors because it shows in specific detail several ways that regenerative real estate development is different from conventional processes. It also highlights the potential financial rewards for investors who are open to regenerative projects versus conventional real estate development. This is the Blue Dot Project podcast. Before this episode, you may have heard it as the Climate Lovers podcast produced by the Blue Dot Project. I'm your host, David Vronikar. We've updated the podcast name because our topics have expanded far beyond climate change. We still cover climate change, but from a wider perspective. We now share ideas for how to finance ways of living regeneratively, especially through regenerative communities. Our goal is to help mitigate the many risks to life on Earth by funding an alternative future that protects all life for the generations that follow us. The story of Salish Sea Farms is a great example of the benefits of regenerative thinking. It starts with a piece of coastal farmland that lay neglected for many years. This land lies about 26 miles, or 42 kilometers, south of Vancouver, British Columbia. Notably, Vancouver is the least affordable city in North America. This detail is relevant because the new owner of Salish Sea Farms bought the land for a steal, considering its closeness to such an expensive and desirable urban area. The land is also about 140 miles, or 225 kilometers, north of Seattle, Washington, another pricey urban center. Despite the proximity of Salish Sea Farms to both Vancouver and Seattle, its market value was relatively low because the area is somewhat hard to reach. The land wasn't great for farming, and its lack of septic capacity limited its potential for residential development. But through regenerative thinking, the landowner and Latitude planned a property that's now zoned for an active farm, 200-some residential units, and a mixed-use town center. Today, lots within the development are on the market for up to 20 times the price the owner paid for the land just a few years earlier. The developers seek investors in the area to help build the local economy with profits generated by their construction loans. The plan is also to help restore traditional salmon fishing practices for the indigenous tribes in the area. This is the story of how it came about. In In the prior podcast episode, Neil Collins noted that a growing number of investors are led by values beyond a desire to make money. They know what a regenerative culture is, and they want to create a regenerative project. But they may not know how to put a project together, and they may be unaware of financial tools available to fund their project.
And that's where we got called in with Sailor Sea Farms. It started with a community that needed a lot of help that has been overlooked. I got called in by a gentleman named Steve Brisbane, who has been a real estate developer as his career over 25 years, but he wanted to retire and start a farm. Steve had married a lady that was working at the University of British Columbia. So he wanted to live as close as possible, or to buy a farm as close as possible to her. But because Vancouver, BC is the highest priced real estate per square foot in North America, it made a lot more sense for him to look south of the border in the United States for this land.
Steve found a community called Point Roberts. It sits at the end of a short peninsula that extends downward from the Canadian province of British Columbia. The top of the peninsula is in Canada, and the bottom is in the United States. To get to Point Roberts from Seattle, you first drive into Canada and then back down into the United States part of the peninsula. You can also reach Point Roberts by private boat or aircraft, but there's no ferry service. Point Roberts lies in a body of water called the Salish Sea, which connects to the Pacific Ocean. The Salish Sea is named for the indigenous Coast Salish people who have lived in the area for thousands of years. The sea served as important fishing grounds, and Point Roberts was strategically located for trade with other tribes. Steve bought a 43-acre, or 17-hectare parcel, that he wanted to turn into a regenerative farm. He was inspired by the writings of Wendell Berry, an American farmer, poet, and essayist who writes about living in harmony with nature.
The eco-theological side that calls people towards the reverence of place is amazing. And I love to find people that have that deeper reverence and wanting to come in with a stewardship approach. But the community has really been stymied for development and growth because they don't have the septic capacity, because the soils don't have the right profile, and they don't have municipal sewer, except on his farm, on a 10-acre parcel that the adjacent marina was dredged in years back, and soils were dumped onto that portion of the farm, and that created these dense soils that you can percolate wastewater into.
For septic systems, you need soils deep enough so that water can infiltrate and percolate through the ground to purify it naturally. Steve found that the deep soils from prior dredging operations could process enough wastewater for 250 homes. But he wanted to go further than just installing a big septic system with its massive underground tanks. He thought about other ways to purify wastewater from the residential plots he planned to build on the sloping ground above his farm. Steve and Neil discovered technology from Europe that could turn human wastewater into Class B water that's clean enough for humans to drink. Steve planned to use the technology in a sewage system that cleanses wastewater flowing from the future homes. The clean water then flows downhill to the farm. Steve also had to think about what to do with other water that runs off the roads in the uphill fields. The conventional remedy would be to install French drains. But from listening to the Regenerative Real Estate podcast, Steve learned about permaculture design and how to capture water and store it in the ground. He wanted to use the water for the crops and livestock he planned for his farm. He'll use controlled grazing of cattle, pigs, sheep, and chickens and goats to fertilize the land and improve soil structure. Steve designed a series of swales, or shallow depressions in the ground, to channel the water where he wants it to go. The swales slow the flow of water so it soaks into the ground. He used his knowledge of civil engineering to sculpt 7,000 lineal feet, or about 2 kilometers of swales, that crisscross the farm along the contours of the land. Water that comes down the slope to his farm hits the swales, which slows the flow so the water sinks into the ground. The water irrigates trees planted along the contours of the swales.
And then we started to assemble properties around it, because if you're stymied on development growth, then that means you've got high density commercial zoning that you theoretically can put housing and mixed use development there. this is an example of how you can approach a project that is, by all means, going to be a regenerative agriculture project where you can rotate animals over a patch of land and have a diverse polycultural system, but it is supportive of development rather than antithetical to the development.
Bankers and investors welcome this kind of opportunity to profit from arbitrage. The owner bought the land at a low price because it appeared to have little potential for development. Then the owner worked with a regenerative developer to create a closed-loop, eco-friendly sewer system that can serve up to 250 residential units.
We create a town center in this community that's been lacking that focal point to create there. And we can work with other builders and developers within the community that want to do things like creating an oceanside hotel that works with the indigenous fishing group and a group called the Salish Center for Sustainable Fisheries. They are trying to anchor indigenous food traditions and seafood harvesting in ways that's been done for thousands upon thousands of years.
The indigenous name for the area means the place of fish racks. The Coast Salish people had set up drying racks there to prepare their catch for trade. But the Coast Salish no longer use the area for that activity. Salmon populations have plunged because of development, habitat loss, overfishing, and other factors. Today, the Salish people catch salmon by hand or with other sustainable ancestral methods. They sell their catch as a commodity for 10 cents a pound in markets where they compete against big salmon farms and fishing trawlers. That's the only commercial channel available to them now. Part of the developer's goal is to reestablish the ancestral practices and contribute to the local economy.
So we're able to create a 32-room boutique hotel that's got three different restaurants and a cannery within it and provide a premium price by putting out a premium product for hand-caught salmon that is literally caught outside the front door. This started with trying to keep water onto a property, and now it's unlocked a lot of different opportunities and the ability to go out to ask the community, what is important to you? What needs to be here? And how can we do it within the constraints of building and finance and zoning and all that kinds of things?
The project now includes these components: a 45-acre multi-species regenerative farm designed for silvopasture agroforestry, salmon and seaweed harvesting and processing, a 32-room oceanside boutique hotel in an adaptively reused cannery. The hotel is on 4 acres, or about 1.5 hectares, of oceanfront property that overlooks the Gulf Islands of British Columbia. It will include a few restaurants that serve farm-to-table food and a commercial processing kitchen. The hotel will enable guests to learn about the indigenous history of Point Roberts. The project also includes a mixed-use development that provides market-rate housing and lodging for the local workforce, and it provides space for commercial development. A second innovative project for Neil's company is the Marrowstone Inn and Spa. Neil and his wife, Alyssa, had long wanted to work on a development project of their own. They wanted to do it near their home on Whitby Island, about 34 miles or 55 kilometers north and west of Seattle. Neil had been hunting for a piece of tideland property where they could sustainably grow oysters, shellfish, and seaweed. That's how we discovered a unique piece of private property for sale.
We came across a property on an island just to the west of us called Marrowstone Island. It's a beautiful spot overlooking the Olympic Mountains. This property has 11 acres of deeded tideland, and that's how I originally found it. It was a historic lodge and inn. It's got 9 beachfront cabins with a Scandinavian-style lodge on it. We saw a ton of potential to restore what was and then add some more density so that you can have a better pro forma. but then use that same mechanism of people that are coming to experience the local place to have a funding mechanism to revitalize the marine habitat.
They started by asking what the marine habitat needs in order to thrive. What would it take to revitalize this place?
We really started to understand that 95% of the habitat for shellfish has been lost within the Puget Sound. And this is really the basis of the ecosystem. So if we want happy orcas swimming in the Puget Sound that tourists can go see, they need salmon. Well, what do the salmon need? Well, they need this other habitat is created through the kelp forest and the mussel beds and the oyster beds and all that. You've got to go find the right kind of tidelands, and then you've got to create the funding mechanism to get the permit and to do the operations.
Neil and Alyssa saw the opportunity to create a business model that blends hospitality with environmental restoration.
It gives further opportunity for us to reexamine the impact we want to be having within that place, not only to steward the property correctly, but to be functioning within the community and engaging the local community around what this project is and how they want to be represented in there and what the offerings are for the local community rather than having this exclusive stance.
Neil saw that financing of the construction alone would generate millions of dollars of profit for equity investors, and he wanted that profit to stay in the local economy. The more common approach would be to raise the full amount from a single source that might be across the country. The profit on the loan would then go to those distant investors. To attract local investors would be harder. For Neil, it means raising $10 million in many chunks or tranches, which could be as small as $50,000 each.
It's really challenging to do that. You're going to be effectively having to manage a lot of different relationships, and your risk goes way up because can you actually do the raise? But how much opportunity, especially if you're on an island, can you have to raise $10 million within the immediate community? Maybe some percentage of luck is going to come out to get a project funded that way. So for us, how do you go out and find the larger investment checks as close to home as possible to support that region? And working within the rules and regulations of syndications and private equity.
At the time this podcast is published, both projects are past their planning stages, and Neil is currently attracting investors for Sailor Sea Farms. What can we take away from these two examples of regenerative real estate development? Both projects illustrate the same points we made in part one of this two-part series. Number one, regenerative development focuses on building communities rather than on building physical assets. Number two, regenerative developers don't start with a concept and then try to pitch it to a community. Instead, they listen to the bioregion, the land, and the community. Their planning goes in new directions as they learn. Number three, regenerative developers take a step beyond sustainability by creating communities that regenerate the environment rather than just not harming it. Number four, regenerative developers are often open to a broader range of financing arrangements and investment sources than our conventional developers. To learn more about Sailor Sea Farms and the Marrowstone Inn, visit Neil Collins' website at chooselatitude.com. If you've enjoyed this episode of the Blue Dot Project podcast, please share it with your friends or colleagues. And subscribe through your favorite podcast provider so you don't miss any episodes. Next time, we'll visit with Zen Honeycutt. She's founder of a group called Moms Across America. Zen and her organization advocate healthful food production through regenerative organic farming methods. The topic is relevant to anyone who cares about the safety and nutritional value of food for themselves and their loved ones. It's especially relevant to impact investors because Zen addresses the worldwide need to increase the volume of production for healthful foods. She talks about the rising demand for food grown with regenerative organic farming methods. Please also look for our twice monthly email update, the Blue Dot Brief. It's a new publication that offers concise updates and hand-curated topics for busy impact investors. If you want to learn more about investing in regenerative living, this belongs on your reading list. You can find it on Substack. Once again, I'm your host, David Veronicar. With thanks to Phoebe Lean DeMay, and Maria Di Pace, our post-production team. See you next time.